VentureCast.
It's a failure on the Beatles' part to figure out how to insulate themselves, but it's a failure of the world to protect the most precious commodity they have, which is that band and its music. Like, there's nothing as pure as when those guys bite into a melody and bring it to life from nothing. And we Lennied that thing, man. We held that rabbit until we just crushed it. And it makes me really, really sad.
50 years of music with 50-year-old white guys.
Do this.
Podcast listeners cannot pick up on without the visual.
They can hear the jackness and the confidence of his voice. There's
one
no
thing that's
question
sad
about
is
it.
That I don't record shirtless, but believe me, I'm looking into it.
like Bert Kreischer.
I'm gonna oil up, you know, my opinions will carry a lot more weight.
Well, I wonder, do our listeners hear Jeff's microphone against his shirt more, or just the rippling of
Ben? Oh, shut up. You and your rippling microphone. So on my way home tonight, I'm driving up the road to my house, and I'm tired. I'm like, oh, geez, I hope I have enough energy. And all the streetlights just came on, like, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Right.
I felt like it was like a wonderful metaphor for to come home, do the podcast, be happy. It's all going to be all right.
We're on our way home.
That's exactly right. Oh, what nice foreshadowing.
Right, we're going to go there first. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a music podcast on the planet Earth. So we need to give 5 minutes, a tight 5 minutes to the Beatles documentary. What's your take, Ben Barton?
Oh, thank you for asking, Timmy. So first, I want to report back, much more importantly, India Kincannon's take.
Yes, so mayor of Knoxville, Tennessee.
I'm sitting in there, I'm watching episode one, which is 2 hours and 20 minutes, and I'm about 45 minutes in, and they're just sitting around noodling, which, by the way, I actually liked it. India Kincannon walks in, she's like, what's this? And I'm like, oh, it's that Beatles documentary. She's like, what Beatles documentary? I was like, oh, the one that came out over Thanksgiving. And she's like, she pauses for just takes one beat. And then she's like, is this the whole thing? Like, this is it? And I'm like, I don't know. I've only watched an hour, but I mean, I feel like this is pretty much going to be it. And she was like, why are you watching this? And I was like, oh, well, Jeff watched the whole thing. We want to talk about it in the podcast. She said, how long is it? And I was like, it's 8 hours. And then without missing a beat, she's like, I thought you told me Jeff was busy. Jeff's not busy.
Oh, my God. That is harsh. Jeff,
so,
your
first
response.
Of all, I am busy. I'm just not paying attention, India. So I can have the Beatles.
There's no way that your children or your family watch this with you.
Suze watched the whole thing with me. She won't listen to 1 second of this podcast, but she watched all 8 hours of the Beatles documentary.
Wow. Did she actually like it?
Yeah, and B watched the last 4 hours. Like, she was coloring and like playing with calico critters and stuff. But she was in the room. Will had
a little guys,
less
little
interest.
Animals.
I love that you asked for a tight 5 minutes on a sprawling 8 hour documentary. So here's my take on it. Aside from the remarkable quality of the footage, like, I don't know what Peter Jackson's deal with the devil is, but he turned that grainy, miserable footage into like you are there iPhone 13 quality. I couldn't believe how beautiful it looked for what it used to look like. But I really enjoyed it, and it made me profoundly sad. Like, I was melancholy for, I don't know, 2 or 3 days afterwards. I could not shake the sadness
what's the
that
source?
I felt.
Yeah. What's the source of that?
I would say, in a very few number of words, like, I wish the world was good enough for a place where the Beatles could be in it. Like, I totally get now they had to break up because the world was just going to not allow them to be what they had been through the 1960s. Like, the world just became a more divisive, dark, warring, complicated place like it had always been. And the Beatles like had this little micro moment where they moved youth culture in particular and really world culture a tiny bit. Like, hey, maybe it would be better if we all got along a little bit. And it lasted about a year. And then like, nah, I think we better shoot the people we don't agree with and plunge ourselves back into war and conflict and rape the natural world of its resources. And that's it. But and the Beatles in 1969 were still like getting together and having tea and toast every morning and talking about the newspaper and then trying to make art.
They were headed. You're really very, very different directions. I mean, even if the world had been like, yeah, let's do this, I think they would have eventually.
I think if the world had been a different place, they would have figured out how to take a break, let George make a solo record. They wouldn't have been, it wouldn't have felt like all or nothing the way it was. So, I also have to say, like, the work ethic that is on display, you say noodling, like, that's a band that had released the White Album 11 weeks previously. 11 weeks ago, they put out the White Album. Like, you know what we should do is we should go right in and try to write and record an entire record, 14 songs in 14 days. Let's go. Like, they burned themselves out because they asked so much of themselves.
Oh, believe me, that is on my mind. Like,
super. I admire that so much.
Oh, dude, I admire is the wrong word. I would put it as super stupid. And by the way, I like the documentary. Here's a couple of things I'll say about that. The first thing is we've talked a lot here about the effect of fame, and we'll come back and circle back around this with Taylor Swift. But if you go back to the old Taylor Swift conversation, I was like super worried about that.
Right, right.
Because fame and the digital media and all of that stuff is so brutal.
Yeah.
Dude, this is 1969 and these guys are so stupid. It's amazing now, but they're so stupid. They film every minute they're together. 150 hours.
I know.
Yeah.
Like, maybe we have this backwards. Maybe fame draws the cameras. You know what I mean? They chose to do this. And in particular, McCartney foisted it on them. You can see the other dudes have zero interest. And there's multiple parts in the documentary where the mic zooms in and you can see it. And the guys in the band are like, what in the actual fuck is going on here?
You know, right?
I don't know if you know. I live in a mansion. I've got more money than God. I don't have to be on camera all the time. And like, like they wear outfits that look really uncomfortable because they got to look cool. They're going to be on camera. They try and act cool. Every single moment in the documentary, and Jackson's great at this, where they're like clowning around trying to be the Beatles, is so forced and horrible. Yeah. Like the looks on their faces, they're like, I can't do this for another 10 seconds. Like, I'm so tired of this. And to do all this, like, so that's one thing that I noted. Like, it's crazy that they chose to subject themselves.
Yes,
to
I agree.
Horrible. Can you imagine someone following up with a camera for 3 solid weeks recording every minute of your day? Like, it's just unwatchable.
Yeah, it's called and pandemic then, teaching. It was horrible. Like, Zoom is that's what we're doing. It's
and then
awful.
Paul and John go off to have a private conversation and they bug them.
Yes.
They bug them. There's a mic in a freaking teapot or whatever, a flower pot. Like, it's insane how horrible their lives are. First, second, the scenes where they're reading the newspaper to each other just broke my heart.
I read the news today. Oh,
just broke my heart. They need someone to come in there and take that paper from them and be like, I'm the Beatles, don't read the paper. No. Throw that away. Like, the part where Paul's reading the paper and John singing nonsense over it was like, oh, it just seared my face. It was so horrible. Like, there's something, I guess they're just humans, but I mean, like, but they couldn't let it go. And then also, dude, the fact that they were running their own company, all of that stuff was so stupid.
Oh,
like,
man.
They have multiple business meetings. Like, they talk about the things they're buying and the TV show they're doing and stuff like that. If you're the Beatles, you're a precious commodity. And I mean, you don't spend your time and break up because you don't want to have a bunch of group meetings anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they need to only spend their time writing songs and loving on each other. And that's it.
Yeah, right.
All but the rest of that stuff.
I think they would have gotten there. I think they were inventing the wheel that destroyed them. Like, there was no rock and roll machinery until there was a rock and roll machinery to feed that band and all the bands that come in their wake. But if they had just like taken a couple of years, no one had ever taken time off. Like, if you didn't have a record, your career was over. They were still thinking like Little Richard, right? Like,
no, but dude, not everybody.
Hold on, I'm not done. the Stones haven't done their tour of the US where they realize that kids are listening now, right? Like they haven't, like the Stones are about to tour America that fall with a real PA and be like, holy crap, you can put on a concert and they don't scream through your show. They actually listen. If they wait for that tour to happen, if they come back like, guys, it's a whole different ball game out there. Like, and then they let the star maker machinery work for them rather than inventing it to try to do it themselves. There's a world here where they find their way back together and they provide hope that was deeply in need in the 1970s and not available. One of the things that you talk about so brilliantly, Ben, is the darkness of American 1970s films. The 70s are such a dark, dark moment. It's the great hangover of the failure of the Peace of Love movement, but it's the failure of the world. It's a failure on the Beatles' part to figure out how to insulate themselves, but it's a failure of the world to protect the most precious commodity they have, which is that band and its music. Like there's nothing as pure as when those guys bite into a melody and bring it to life from nothing. And we Lennied that thing, man. We held that rabbit until we just crushed it. And it makes me really, really sad.
The thing is, I think all of that's fine, but yeah. I think blaming the world is wrong, man. It's the complete Radiohead thing. Who did this to you? You did it to yourself, just you. They completely did it to themselves. Dude, nobody made them open Apple Corporation buying things, and then they had to go to meetings about it. The thing that was amazing about this is there are meetings in this movie where I'm like, oh my god, I'd shoot myself if I had to go to this meeting. Like this meeting's hard. Like this is worse than a faculty meeting.
And I love it. I love how apologetic. Like there's that great moment where Lennon's like, yeah, I've got to meet with Alan Klein. You know, I've put him off twice already. I feel bad about it, but we're going to go out tonight. And they got you should throw Alan Klein in the trash. Like, who is Alan Klein? I feel kind of bad. I mean, I was going to meet with him. Like, there's still regular people behind those Beatles. And that, anyway, that's fine. That's a type.
So wait,
five.
Hold on. So I obviously neither, especially not me, but Jeff too. We're not the Beatles. We're not successful. I have a couple of band notes that I think Jeff will agree with.
Okay.
All right. So the first thing is
should have been
a
there
band is funny him. Because it's not actually your best friends. People assume it's your best friends, but it's not your best friends. Your best friends don't happen to play bass, drums, guitar, and another guitar. Like it's people you kind of sort of know who play instruments who you can get together to do it. And believe me, when you form a band, you're not like, I wonder what it'll be like when we're really successful 10 years from now, we're millionaires. Like, that's a problem that would be awesome to have. You're like, wait, hold the phone. Yeah. Like, how are you going to get along with this guy? You can barely stand him now and you live in Hamburg with him. And you're like, I'm not worried about that, man. Like, if I have millions later, that'd be awesome. So that's part one. Second part is Jeff didn't like my word noodling, but like where they like keep joking around, they keep dicking around. The part where anytime Ringo gets up for a second, someone else jumps in there and plays the drums.
Oh, like, it's the best. Oh, it's
if
so
you've ever
funny.
Been in a band and you're not the drummer, you know that as soon like the drummer's like cough, cough. You're like, oh, can I take a slot? Like there's so many times I jumped on the drums, and there's a great, in my opinion, a great Jeff Simon story. So it's a Haverford All-Star Fiesta where all the local bands at Haverford are going to play. And I can't remember how they slated it, but my band was not slated as the cleanup act for us. We were very mad because we're so much better than everybody else. Anyhow, then the plan was we're all going to come back up an all-star show, Tim.
All right.
An all-star show. Like 15 dudes are all going to get up on stage and all play together. We're going to play Sweet Home Chicago. And so we schedule a time in the band practice area to actually practice this. And of course, the drummer in Jeff's band doesn't show up. And so I'm like, I'll play the drums. So I get back behind the drums and I'm just like, dum, 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 dum. Like I'm just like, just wailing on the cymbals. I'm not playing seriously at all. And I'll just be frank, I wasn't a great guitarist. You can imagine how I was as a drummer. Like I'm barely keeping time. I'm like, splash, 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 splash. Jeff just like stops in the middle. It's like 15 people in here, and he and I are like best friends. And he's like, "Will you freaking stop? Will you freaking stop? You suck." He's like, "We're gonna play in 2 nights, and I'm not gonna get embarrassed. I'm not gonna be embarrassed because you can't bother." It was amazing.
He got on his high horse.
It was such a McCartney performance.
Oh my God,
he was so mad at everybody else. He stormed out, and then our mutual friend Rich Thomas was like, "Hey, what got into him?"
Oh my God. Jeff Simons, is this true?
Oh, I'm sure it's true. I of course block out the most humiliating moments in my life. I'm sure that's true. I'm sure I was just like, I'm surrounded by charlatans.
Oh, that's my hilarious. God.
That is so funny. Wow. I thought you were going to tell the story about how I had to sit in on drums for one gig for you guys. And
You were great.
It mattered more to me not to screw up your set than it did to like breathe air. Like I had like blisters on my fingers from playing. And like, I was so exhausted by the concentrating not to screw up. Like, and then you got back out there like, it's supposed to be fun. I'm like, it is not fun.
It's a profession.
It is a deeply important event.
Hey, so I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Let's rank the people, the Beatles that we see in Get Back from most likable to least likable.
Oh, that's a really good question.
Wow.
I've got an easy number one. There's an obvious number one.
And it is.
Ringo.
Ringo, no question.
I mean, we're not ranking by talent or songwriting or anything else, but I mean, Ringo is the greatest guy in the history of the universe.
He's the most lovable dude. Friendly to everybody, kind to everybody.
They're in a 45-minute meeting about where they're going to play on the roof, which is like the 18th meeting they've had. And Ringo's like, "I'd like to play on the roof," and no one listens to him at all. I'm like, "You're my guy, Ringo."
Under the sea.
All right, so I got Ringo number one.
Now, this is interesting because I'm really curious to see who number two is.
Oh, no. My number two you're going to agree with, but it's not who you think. It's Billy Preston.
Yeah.
He's easily the second most likable person. He shows up. He's the greatest. He's super friendly and nice. He's just happy to be there. And they play so much better. Like, they have a real musician there. They're like, "Oh, well, we better stop fucking around." I mean, they actually play when he's there. Preston's great.
Yes. All right.
Third... Then this is a tough one because, dude, everybody else looks terrible. McCartney has got moments where you're like, "Oh, dude."
Yep.
And let alone George and John. I've got McCartney third.
Me too. And it's hard for me because you just revealed through my terrible behavior the worst thing about Paul McCartney.
Oh, dude. Yeah. There's the control, so many scenes.
The control freak. The,
so bad.
The creating so bad. His own, so creating bad. His own mythology before the thing has even happened. Ugh.
Oh, and dude, there's so many scenes. Like, so, I mean, one of the things that's hard about being in a band is like everyone's got egos in a band. And even when you're in a crappy band in college, when somebody else in the band is like, no, play it this way, you're like, "I'm freaking going, I'm out. I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm going to quit this band, but I don't get paid for it. That sucks." Can I come in as a
non musician? I feel for Paul McCartney because John Lennon seems so disengaged at times, and he's got his girlfriend sitting right next to him. And I'm sure Paul McCartney's like, "Let's get back to like when we wrote songs together." Like, it's, you know,
keep in mind, there are those 2 days where Paul McCartney brings his stepdaughter to work, and she's like banging on the cymbals, and Ringo's like, "Hello, like, hello."
I feel that's different. I feel that John was not.
Let's do John when we get to the rankings.
Actually, one of the things I like about the documentary is Paul's pretty cool to Yoko. He's nice to her.
Oh, he's super nice.
When she wants to caterwaul, he's on drums smiling like, "I could do this all day. I'm into it." Like, he says at that one moment where it's like, Yoko's all right, you know, like if it's going to be between Yoko and us, he should choose Yoko. Like, that felt really very real to me, that moment.
I agree. Like, and this is a good one. The documentary does a nice job of disputing the Yoko broke them up. Like, she's not a bonus, but she's not the reason they broke up. So
she spends most of her time doing crossword puzzles, which is really hilarious. Like, she's just sitting there like with a front row seat to a Beatles session, and she's like, four across.
Oh, and she's knitting at times too.
Yeah, it's great. It. She's just so bored.
It's a close one, but I've got George and then John.
No, I'm the other way around. George is my least favorite.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll you give me the argument for George, and then I'll give you the argument for John.
Let me give you the argument. Go ahead, Tim.
I hate Eeyore.
Oh, you're so funny.
I mean,
you hate Eeyore.
Here's the thing. My song.
Oh, that I actually feel like there are such dicks to him about his song.
They are, but
the two songs he's bringing that they're such assholes about are both good ones. Like, Something is a really good song, right? And he's super nice to Ringo's trying to write Octopus's Garden, and George is like, you ought to use this other chord here. Like, he's trying to help him out.
You know, to get to the G one. A bit, but from the beginning.
I feel like in John, you there are moments when you see why people love him so much. Like, he's funny and he actually is sensitive. And when that in that secret taped conversation, he's like, we treat George like shit and that's on us. Like, and we really hurt his feelings yesterday. And he looks at his oldest friend and says, like, you put us in a position where we have to be mad at you and it breaks my heart. And to be able to do that, to be that real when you're like dealing with your heroin addiction and your marriage is broken up and Yoko's there and you're the most famous guy on the planet. And like to be have all of those other things bombarding you and to be able to look at your old friend and be like, you make it hard sometimes, man. What can I tell you? Like that elevates him to fourth place above George. Just that moment of realness. So what's the George argument?
He's so much more disruptive than George. Oh.
He's so disruptive.
He's so mean to India came in at one of the points where they're playing Let It Be and everyone else in the band is yawning and then Lennon comes in with a fake voice like Let It Be and he's like, what the hell is happening? Yeah. And I was like, oh, they're mad because they don't like, and she's like, are they mocking one of the greatest songs in the history of mankind? Is that a thing that's happening? And I'm like, oh yeah, that's what they're doing. And Lennon's leading it. Anyhow, I mean, so
then
And also then the Yoko thing.
When they get the right take, though, Lennon quietly says, well, that was actually rather grand.
Let it be, let it be.
Love about Lennon is he had to poke a hole in McCartney to get the real performance. Like,
oh, I don't disagree with that.
Take
he dragged
18
it out.
Of Let It Be is good, but take 25 is phenomenal. And Lennon's like going, Let It Be was just enough to like, Paul was like, all right, I'll show you, son of a bitch. Like, it's a weird working relationship, but I don't know. Anyway, why is George preferable?
Oh, George is preferable for the reason that you said. It's like they're really mean to George and he's trying really, really hard. He's at least a net positive overall. And my experience of Lennon in this was a net negative.
Oh, okay.
He's really like the jokiness really bugged me. The fake voices really bugged me. The mugging for the camera really bugged me.
You love fake voices. You do fake voices.
I know, but not when like this is a professional setting. Like they're all there to work. Like the other thing that really bugged me about this, and first of all, is the amateur hour aspect to it, where they start in one place and like the sound's bad. And
oh
you're
my
like,
God!
You're like, you needed the Beatles to show up to tell you the sound was bad. Like someone couldn't go in that place beforehand. And then they get to Apple Studios and everything's messed up. That's a different issue.
Yeah, I mean,
the thing that really bugged me here. And actually, Paul says it at one point. He says, our time is valuable.
Yeah.
And Lennon does not agree with that.
No, like, he doesn't.
He's wasting their time over and over again. And I mean, that is so much like, and Ringo and George, for bless their hearts for all their faults and stuff, are not wasting time. You know what I mean? Yeah. Lennon is just putzing around. And then also the Yoko thing, the caterwauling is not okay ever under any circumstances. She's not bad. But I mean, it's weird. It's weird. Like, what's up with that dude? Like,
why is she in a circle?
And also, why? Like, who wants to spend all their time 24 hours a day with anybody? Like, not to be mean. I love my wife, but I mean, like, she's not here with me now.
I love that you became Groucho Marx there for 2 seconds. I love my wife. What can I say?
I do team teach with my wife, so I don't think I can comment. We're in the classroom together all day long.
But there's a basement with a heavy bag that I'm seeing you in. So there's a sanctuary. Yeah. Anyway, I think it's worth watching. I get why India would like find it interminable, but
well, honestly, the interminability of it, I was like, oh, where would you cut? And I was like, actually, a big chunk of the reason,
part of the point,
they want to show you how boring it was, how horrible and boring it was, and you need 8 full hours to really drag you through it.
But wait. The worst guy in the movie.
Uh-oh.
Is Michael Lindsay Hogg.
Oh,
the guy they originally choose to direct this thing. he's amateur hour. I mean, he is a ridiculous putz. And when he keeps pushing for the show in Libya, and he's like, boat in some Arabs. I mean, I can't. Peter Jackson is so mean to that guy because he's got all this footage.
He buries him. You know and he would be ranked above Paul for sure, is Glenn Johns. Glenn Johns really comes off great.
Yep. I agree. Glenn Johns comes off fabulously.
I am thinking about what you're saying, Ben, about like fame and how to handle fame and like all those press conferences they show in the beginning where they're in a beef with the press about Jesus and what John said about Jesus. It's like, why did the Beatles just like fly into Melbourne and say, yeah, we're going to do a press conference. Like, what are ticket sales going to be hurt or something like that? Like, they did not have to go to every single press junket that was set up for them.
No, for sure. And it was like, people were not managing it appropriately.
Right.
No. And remember, also, these are 28-year-old guys that were watching in this documentary.
Yeah. Right.
They're still young men, right? I mean, it's kind of amazing they held together as long as they did without embarrassing themselves. You know, the most embarrassing thing they do is misunderstand Eastern theology.
Oh my God, like, dude. And also, you guys didn't mention this with George.
Yeah.
Oh, with the guys, the monks, the random monks.
The Hare Krishnas are amazing.
I'll see your Yoko and I will raise you two
more. Oh my God. Dude, when the camera pans over to the Hare Krishna dude, it just sits on it for 10 seconds. It made me laugh so hard.
That was so great. It was so great.
All right. Should we?
Tight five became a loose 15. It's okay though.
No, that was 30. I mean, should we put out a Beatles podcast instead, or should we try to push through 93?
So what's great is we're actually going to make this like the Get Back documentary.
We're gonna have a lot
rather than edit. Let's just talk about whether we should release this. And then
the problem, Timmy, is it's not like it was in my head. In my head, it sounded different. I feel like if we did it one more time, we might get it right.
People on Twitter be like, why are they so mean to Tim? They're such jerks.
That's right. Who's Glenn Johns in this scenario? I'm also amazed that like how tied to British customs their lives are. Like they have tea and toast every morning with the same marmalade. I love that moment.
The funniest thing about the toast
who has the marmalade? I'm like, really? You're 28-year-old billionaires and you want that crappy toast?
I know. I couldn't believe how bad the toast looked. I was like, I mean, seriously, that was a really, really like I was like, you have all the money in the world. You have anything to eat that you could possibly want. And they're like, where's our toast? Like there's a morning they show. They're like, where's the toast, man?
So funny.
And the toast is all burnt. It's not even good looking bread. It's like burnt white bread.
It's in that little like presentational, like toast and triangles.
All right. Well, let's push through with 1993. If you haven't seen the Beatles documentary.
And Timmy, if you want to re-edit it, that's fine.
India. No, that was great.
Tim's like, I'm not doing any work.
Yeah.
But if you want to cut into two podcasts, if you want to cut into two podcasts, just start right now, 1993, fellas, and we'll buzz through 93.
Exactly.
Oh, and the Beatles could be a little bonus package.
Indeed.
All right, fellas. Hey, if you're having as much fun as we are, leave us a review on iTunes. Give us a rating on Spotify, iHeartRadio. Wherever you listen to podcasts, give us a shout. And then check us out on Twitter or at our Facebook page, 50 Years of Music with 50-Year-Old White Guys.
Hey there, fabulous souls. I'm Stephanie Bachlaan.
And I'm Eden Alpert.
And we're the hosts of the brand new podcast, Unapologetically Fab.
Get ready to join us on an amazing and real journey as we dive into life after 40 and own it.
We're all about changing the narrative, leaning into who you are, and living a life by your own design.
Join us as we embrace life unapologetically and redefine success.
This is Unapologetically Fab,
an Electric Cat production.
See you there.
Electric Cat. Welcome to Transforming 45, the podcast that celebrates the incredible power of passionate voices. I'm your host, Lisa Boat. Join me in conversation with heart-led humans who share their deeply personal stories of transformation. Transforming 45 is here to uplift, connect, and remind you that it's never too late to write your next chapter. So get ready to be inspired, empowered, and transformed. Join me in this community where through powerful storytelling, we heal and reclaim our inherent magic.
Electric acid.